And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 31st of July, 2025. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. And hopefully we'll keep you informed and entertained over the next 3 hours on the show. We want your views and comments and topics, of course, throughout. And the way you get in touch with us, WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, we're waiting on those calls too, 074 91 25000. And if you prefer to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And feel free to watch the program if you're at home, working at home. We're on the YouTube app on your Fire Stick or your smart TV, and all of the TVs sold nowadays pretty much are smart TVs, and that YouTube app is sitting there for you, so you can watch the show and most of our guests on the program as well, and any pictures of instances we're talking about, that type of stuff. We're also across our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning, political unity delivers for Donegal, is one of the headlines. The unified approach of Donegal Politicians Network, or Donegal's political network, overcame officialdom in delivering the surgical hub for Letterkenny University Hospital. That's a quote attributed to Councillor Kieran Brogan. The main feature piece, though, as concerns grow that as many as 400 post offices are facing the prospect of closing by the end of this year, Tom O'Callaghan, the leader of the Independent Postmasters Group, says postmasters are already losing money and many are not likely to sign a new contract, given the last one was quite a disaster. And we were at this point a number of years ago, I can't quite timeline it, where the network looked like it was a death by a thousand cuts, and something was introduced at that time. Maybe it was these contracts that seemed to be, you know, stemming the flow of closures, or maybe actually it's leading to where we are right now. Mr. O'Callaghan said that a community bank similar to New Zealand and Germany is the only real solution, and every post office would thrive offering mortgages at affordable rates and making it possible for young people to build their own homes. The only one thing I would say in relation to that, I'm not doubting that for a second, is that I think credit unions have somewhat moved into that space. That was suggested going back a number of years, but credit unions are taking a strong foothold in that mortgage space that maybe could have been a natural fit for the post office network. I'm not saying it wouldn't work, I'm just saying. But reading on here, the future of 50% of the post office network hangs in the balance, and unless Ompost comes up with more financial viability for the postmasters, they will be gone. It's a ticking time bomb, and Ompost has failed to put a contract on the table. Technically, the postmasters are now out of contract, says O'Callaghan. Is it presumed, and I don't mean this in any way insensitive to this to the topic, is it presumed that post offices are incredibly important for everyone? I mean, what percentage of us do go in and out of post offices or use post offices for things that are very important to us? Is it the majority? Is it some? Is it a particular demographic? I mean, is there a future for post offices? Do you see a future for post offices? And what would you like to see their function, what they're doing now? Maybe mortgages, maybe other enhanced services. I mean, life moves forward, and I would be very sad personally to see post offices close, but is society moving in a direction that they are of a bygone era? I don't know. And as I say, I know it's a very important infrastructure, and I'm not suggesting that. I'm just throwing it out there for the sake of conversation. I mean, are you in post offices a lot? How important are they to you or your local area? I know I feel they're very important, but I'm just wondering if everyone is of the same view. The front of the Derry People Donegal News this morning. Residents are preparing to lodge an appeal with Ombó Pleanála after planning permission was granted this week for a major apartment development in Letterkenny. The green light has been given to applicant PJ McDermott for the construction of two residential buildings consisting of 6 two-bedroom departments in the first building and 9 two-bedroom departments in the second building at the junction of College Farm Road and Glencar Road. Residents of College Farm Road had lodged a number of written submissions to Donegal County Council detailing their concerns about the size and the density of the development and the dangers they said it posed with an increased traffic volume in a very residential area. These submissions, they said, have fallen on deaf ears, and we did speak to one of the representatives of that association some time ago on this programme. The council approved permission, they're going to appeal it. It is an interesting one because it's that balance, isn't it? I mean, we know we're in a housing crisis. We know where we need the houses. But obviously, you know, people have a right to object to those developments. But then some might say that's stalling the delivery of properties, and on it goes. And that's really, this is an example of one of the problems of delivering housing in this country, in that, you know, people justifiably, in as far as they would see, and I don't know the ins and outs of the case, they don't believe it to be the appropriate site for development in terms of the impact on traffic, their homes and what have you. But we need the houses, and, you know, we have systems, and that all then ends up taking a very long time. On to the Irish Independent now, and the number of households in arrears on their energy bills has hit a record high, just as network charges are set to rise again. Figures obtained by Sinn Féin MEP Lynn Boylan show 301,000 households were in arrears on their electricity bills in May. Ms Boylan said this was a record. Now, that's a significant amount of individuals, because, you know, each one of those could represent two or three people as well in their same house. So their budget constraints are not just impacting the 300, if you get where I'm coming from. Another 175,000 domestic gas customers are behind on their bills. Small firms are also struggling to keep up to date with their bills. A total of 27,400 small firms were in arrears on their electricity bills in May, according to the figures provided to Ms Boylan by Energy Minister Dara O'Brien. Ms Boylan said food price inflation meant families were forced to prioritise having groceries over paying their energy bills on time. And of course, we are in a period of time where we are perhaps less reliant on heating, less reliant on lighting. Businesses are potentially making the most money they might make in a year. So what I'm saying is we're facing into the longer nights, you know, more power usage, maybe businesses not making as much money as the tourists go home, and prices going up. So we could be heading towards a perfect, and then people going back to school and all the costs associated with that. So we could be heading towards the perfect storm of a nightmare for many hundreds of thousands of people in this country. And I think that's a strong indication. If you can't pay your electricity bill, you know, there's other bills going unpaid as well. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and I read this because firstly it's on the second page. It's a significant story, but it's a story that we flagged on this programme many months ago, so many months ago that I can't really remember quite whether it was this year or last. And this was a scheme that would have incentivised landlords to rent houses to Ukrainians as they were leaving, you know, the sheltered accommodation of a hotel or what have you. It was quite obvious what was happening. They were going into the private rental market with €800, potentially employed as well, so they could top up that €800. And any houses that were coming up for grabs, you'd have an €800 head start. Now, it doesn't matter if they're from Ukraine or the ends of the earth. That's not the point here. It was the fact that it skewed the private rental market. And as I say, we've talked about this for a long time. But now the cabinet are talking about it. The scheme to help house Ukrainians is having a negative impact on the rental market, the cabinet has been told. Ministers this week decided any property registered with the Residential Tenancies Board since 2022 will be exempt from the accommodation recognition payment that helps house Ukrainians. This is due to concerns it was impacting on the rental market. Sources indicated that councils had noted situations where landlords had evicted tenants and then offered accommodation through the ARP scheme instead. I believe the €800 they would have received would have been tax-free as well, not to mention the top-up potentially could have been a Friday exchange of an envelope. Well, Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan and Housing Minister James Brown got approval this week for proposals to limit the eligibility of some properties for the ARP. But there's a massive uptake of that here in County Donegal, and I imagine the skewing of the rental market has happened to the point now whereby that measure by government there is not going to have any meaningful impact on the market up here. The Irish Times, the front page, their top story: budget constraints forced the Ombudsman for Children to suspend regular visits to hear concerns from asylum seekers living in direct provision centres, new documents show. Correspondents show the Ombudsman, Dr Niall Muldoon, said his office cannot continue to fulfil our statutory obligation within existing resources. Last year, he requested additional funding from the Department of Children, warning his office had to curtail some of our work due to insufficient resources. So if that was a child welfare issue, that's particularly worrisome, isn't it? On to the Farmers' Journal, which is out this morning, of course, because it is Thursday. And there's fury over peatland appeals. Farmers and the Department of Agriculture are on a collision course this week over controversial requirements on peatland appeals. The appeals relate to the categorisation of some 650,000 hectares of peat soils under the Good Agriculture and Environment Conditions 2 rules, affecting close to 35,000 farmers. The row centres on a contentious department demand that farmers confirm that land parcels under appeal have never been drained, or to confirm whether drainage works are planned. So maybe that might impact on some of you. On to the red top tabloids now, and the devastation in Gaza continues. The man-made famine that is raging in Gaza, and the world eventually seeming to be waking up. Another seven more Palestinians have starved to death in Gaza amid fears famine is now sweeping through the war-battled battered strip. And since this paper went to publish to print, that figure has increased quite greatly, not to mention others that have been shot trying to get food. Officials said the seven died due to famine and malnutrition, one of them a child, raising the hunger-linked death toll to 154 since the war between Israel and Hamas begun. Among those who've starved to death, 90 are believed to have been children. Israeli troops killed 22 Palestinians in Gaza since dawn yesterday, and the death toll is continuing to shoot up, with at least 60,138 people dead, according to local officials. And also, too, there is one development. Canada has said it will recognise Palestine as a state. And what impact did that have? Well, Donald Trump has come out and said, well, if you recognise Palestine as a state, it's going to make making a tariff deal with you very, very difficult. Such is the weight that Israel wields on the United States and other major countries. Really quite remarkable. And Donald Trump has his plate full. He was on Air Force One and was asked questions about Jeffrey Epstein. He wants the story to go away, but it will not go away, it would seem. The paper, the Irish Daily Mirror, reports Jeffrey Epstein stole young women who worked in the spa at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club. This is not being revealed by an insider. The president said this himself. It is his in his latest version of how their friendship ended years ago. One of the women, he said, was Virginia Gough, who was Epstein's best-known sex trafficking victim. Mr. Trump said he barred Epstein from his private club in Florida 2 decades ago because he had been taking people who worked for me. These were underage girls in some cases. The women, he said, were taking out of the spa, hired by him, in other words, gone. And he also said in another interview that he'd never had the privilege of going to his island. And finally, in The Sun this morning, Ireland's hotel industry leaders have raised the alarm about a worrying drop in spending by overseas tourists. A report from the Central Statistics Office shows that overseas tourism spending in Ireland fell by 6% last month compared to June 2024. Some 654,500 foreign visitors came to Ireland last month, a fall of 2% on the same month last year. The Irish Hotels Federation's Paul Gallagher said this appears to be part of a wider decline in tourism spend so far this year, so indicated by recent CSO figures. But, I mean, the cost of everything seemingly has gone up so much. It's not a bit wonder. And also, there's less money about. But anyway, and finally, it's not in the newspapers because it only emerged this morning, but very sad news from the world of broadcasting, and I enjoyed listening to this broadcaster, Mr. Sean Rocks. He was the voice of the Arena Show on RTE Radio 1. He's died at the age of 63. He was on air as recently as last Friday, and his sudden death has come as a shock to his loyal listeners, members of the arts community, his friends and colleagues. Now, I'm not a big fan of the arts, to be honest with you, what I found from Sean Rocks is even when he was speaking about the most sort of intricate or complex artistic items, that he did so in such a way whereby I felt I was learning something, or I could be part of the conversation in listening and understanding. And also he had a very good sense of humour and could mix it up really, really well. So I used to enjoy listening to him when it suited me when I was in the car, if you know what I mean. So it was very saddened to learn that broadcaster and voice of the Arena show, Sean Rocks, has passed away at the age of 63. Our condolences to his family and all of his colleagues in RTE and elsewhere. Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, Fianna Fáil Councillor Paul Canning is with me now. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? And good morning to all your customers.
Doing good, doing good. Right, 2021. It's amazing how quickly time passes. €12.5 million in funding was announced for Fort Dunray. It was one of the biggest investments in tourism in Donegal for some time. Where is that project standing now?
That project has been reviewed. It received planning permission from Donegal County Council, and then it was appealed to and Board Pinalla. Now they have come back yesterday with a refusal based on the proper wastewater treatment system. They're saying that it is that it will affect the Loch Swilly and would there would be a health warning with it. That's layman's terms, you could say.
Was this not addressed as part of the planning process to mitigate any negative impact?
Yeah, it was addressed, but the situation up in Dunray is a difficult site, and the designers or the architects involved were well aware that it's a difficult site, and it's lack of soil. You have a rock base and a lack of soil. So the problem that they came across whenever they were looking for the wastewater treatment scenario is they didn't have enough soil. They weren't even able to do a test hole. So what they had proposed through sort of a desktop idea and through previous documentation, they had proposed to import the wastewater treatment system, and so far as they were going to import the soil, they were going to import the sand polish and filter, et cetera, to try and treat it on site. The board didn't seem to be happy with that because probably they would be of the opinion that after a number of years that it would stop working. Now, all is not lost. I know we will, as the council and as the team, will have to go back through the process again for planning permission. In relation to all of that, they always say that if you can't treat the effluent on site, treat it off site. You know, so we have the option. If we'll look at a couple of other options, there's still options out there.
So you believe there is an engineering solution to this?
There is, yes. Either we look at reed beds or we can actually pipe it off-site to land that has the depth of soil that can treat the effluent. It's one of these, as the man said, doctors, different patients, die scenario. Many of the time I thought a planning application would go through and the planning was of a different opinion. So this is one of those, unfortunately. There's a lot of money here at stake. But I do think we have to get back to the drawing board. Now, it's not as simple as just saying, well, we'll look after what has been the reason that it has been refused. No, it's not that simple, because whenever you start changing different items within the site, then you have to look at different assessments and you have to different layouts. So it's not just a penalty kick, but there is a solution to it. I don't see it being, it's not going to be stopping the project. Time is of the essence for it. We need to get back to the board, meet the stakeholders, and get back working at it again.
How secure is the $12.5 million? It was put on the table in 2021. You know, we're 4 years removed from that. I'm not sure how long now this process might continue. That money, is it ring fenced? Is it secure?
Yeah, the money's secure as we speak. But I know goalposts changes every day of the week, but they are confident, but we need to, as a council and, as I said, as the stakeholder of the Fort Dunray, we need to get back to the drawing board as soon as possible and get the solutions on the table. But at least we know where we stand in relation to the board and what they are looking for at this point in time.
Councillor Fionnán Bradley, your party colleague, obviously shares your disappointment. Do you share, Fionnán, any of Councillor Canning's optimism that this is not the end of the project, more of a delay, or do you have greater concerns about its future altogether?
No, well, at the outset, Greg, I might say good morning to yourself and good morning to your listeners. And no, indeed, I would have to say I do share Councillor Kenning's optimism. Now, this is unbelievably disappointing, don't get me wrong, and I spent all of yesterday evening on the phone speaking to different members of the board and indeed local people down in the Dunree area, and everybody is just completely and totally devastated by this decision. It is a complete fly in the ointment. It's going to delay this project for, I would worry, best case scenario for 18 months. But I have no doubt that everybody will now redouble their efforts. I was speaking to staff both in Fox Ireland and the council yesterday, and everybody is certainly putting the thinking caps on and are going to knuckle down and try to see what is a way around this and how can we find solutions, because this project is just so vital for the whole Anishinaabe area, not just Dunree and not just Dunclenna, that we just can't let it slip by, and we simply cannot allow this funding to be lost, and that's just the bottom line.
Given its proximity to Lough Swilly, Paul, should we not have perhaps seen this coming, that the treatment of effluent was going to be a big deal? Are you content, especially leaning on your sort of your architectural background, that maybe we could have foreseen this to some extent?
Yeah, but in fairness to the company that done it, I would be of the opinion they crossed their T's and they dotted their I's, but it's just the opinion of the board. And there is other options, but just at this point in time, the option that they took didn't suit the board insofar as, like, I've seen where that has worked and worked well, where you import the soil and you import the polishing filters, et cetera, et cetera. At this time, the board is not happy with it. And there is a lot of, there is a lot of protection now of the River Swilly or the Lough Swilly, so they're just doubling their efforts in relation to that, which is understandable, and I don't have an issue with it. We move to another location with the effluent, or we do a rebed idea. I think that's our way out. And
did they give us any guidance as to which they might look more favourably on, or which one of those they might look favourably on?
The board, a little bit like the plan of the board, they're there as the adjudicators. Mm. They're not the designers, and they'll tell you that.
And I suppose, too, down the line, if they were to give some guidance, it might look as biased in a process that has to look completely and utterly unbiased. Fionnán, yeah. I suppose the key here now, though, is to, I mean, take the disappointment, but, crack on again. Go again.
Oh, Greg, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, when this was going to be completed, there were going to be 12 permanent new jobs created down at the site, and it was estimated that up to 550 supporting jobs in construction and in various other sectors within the local economy were going to be supported from this project. And Fods Ireland themselves, back in 2021, when the announcement of the funding was made, had estimated that it was going to be worth $19.5 million. To the economy of Anishinaabe from direct tourism in that first year alone. So that's how important it is, how significant it is, and how serious it is. And from my point of view, there is no option other than knuckling down now, driving on, finding a solution that's going to be acceptable to Commission Planella. And if I might just pick up on a point that yourself and Paul had mentioned, I do feel really now that Commission Planella could have done a lot more to be proactive here and to be helpful, and it's a perfect example of where sometimes they can be a bit of a destructive force in the sense that now a wrecking ball has been driven through the plans that were there and through all the hard work that had been done. So we really do need to see a change of tack from them.
A site visit from them down the line, previously maybe, to sort of say, right, we've got three options here. We've got the option that we're proposing. We've got maybe piping it off-site. Maybe the reed bed idea. What would the board look more favourably on? I don't think that would be unbiased. I'm sure council planners will give some guidance to someone before they lodge an appeal, because it makes the process work a little bit better. It doesn't mean it's compromised in any way, Fionnán.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, in the same way that the council has a pre-planning process for those, who are intending to submit a planning application, like, why can't Commission Planella have some similar system to avoid delays like this that are very frustrating? And by the way, this is costing the Irish taxpayer money now. This delay means that we do have to go back to the drawing board, that we do have to engage the relevant competent professionals, that they obviously have to be paid for the work that they will undertake. But time is money. And the 12.5 million that was granted back in 2021, I mean, from very early on, it was accepted that the project was more than likely going to cost a good bit more than that.
Yeah. And how far will that money go now?
Well, and with the inflation crisis and all the rest of it, you know, every day that we lose as euro, it's costing us more money. So, yeah, I think we definitely need to look at the planning system and try to avoid projects like this that are going to, you know, inject life into a local area and into a local economy. We really do need to find a way to allow them to happen much quicker and much smoother.
On that point, Paul, you know, it's very important that we get our developments right. It's very important that if we create something, it doesn't cause damage to nature or locks or what have you. I think everyone might agree on that. But do you believe that, you know, Onboard Planala should actually be, or on Commission Planala, as it's called now, do you believe that it should be reformed so that it has a more positive role in developments, getting things over the line when they're appropriate, but obviously being there to ensure things don't progress if they're going to be negative?
Yeah, well, you know, they have reformed themselves insofar as getting decisions out quicker and a couple of smaller items. The problem you have, the amount of applications that is now, the world, this country in particular, this county in particular, seems to object to everything, you know. So the amount of applications that have become in front of the board, they just couldn't actually start advising people as to how to do their applications. There would be nothing done, you know. So it's down to the agents, and it's down to Donegal County Council to try and get it right. Sometimes the board looks at it differently, and unfortunately, because of the objections, is that easy done now? You can throw 20 euros in over the counter and say, "I object to this," with no, you know. And I don't mind. Listen,
is that where the reform's required then?
That's where the reform is required. I don't have an issue with people objecting to the bigger projects.
Like, if I don't like something in my backyard, I can chuck 20 quid at it and at the very least delay it for a couple of years.
That's exactly where I was going with
right.
There's 90% in relation to housing especially, there are 90% of people that object to housing. It's not in my backyard in scenario, and I think it's totally wrong. The bigger projects, there is people that have concerns about certain projects coming to their area, etc., and that's okay to argue that out and tease it out. But regarding for houses and that, I think we need to seriously look at how the whole system works, because we have to, you know, you're objecting to your neighbour's sons or daughters getting a house at the end of the day, and that's where it's wrong. Going back to the Dunree project, listen, we'll get it back on track. We've lost time, and as Fiona had said, we've lost money, obviously, and it's going to be the taxpayer that's going to pay at the end of the day. And it's just one of those scenarios. We just have to pick up the pieces and move on.
But in this case, it wasn't objectors. It was just the commission wasn't satisfied with the wasn't satisfied per se with the proposals set. Fiona, go ahead there. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say on that very point, Greg, about the objections, because quite a number of people had contacted me in relation to that yesterday, and I want to make it perfectly clear that, you know, the local people down in that area were very much for this project. The board of Fort Dunree were obviously for it, the council were for it, and Fáilte Ireland were for it. To the best of my knowledge, I believe that there were no more than one or two objections originally. So you're talking that 20 or 40 euro at most is holding 12.5 million to the local economy at ransom, you know. And that's exactly why we do need reform of Uncommissioned Planala.
So well, in other areas of appeal or complaint, there is a sort of a firewall there that will weed out at an early stage, you know, mischievous, you know, objections, for an example, before they go to a full. I'm not sure if on Commission Planala has something along those lines. It would seem not. But just on that point, Fionnán, you know, we just heard a recent announcement of multiples of millions, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of euro in terms of development and all that type of stuff. I mean, obviously, we need to be then spending millions and millions and millions of euro supporting Commission Planala in the work it does, because it's going to be the sticking point.
Oh, listen, absolutely, and I have no problem with that, and I fully understand what Councillor Canning had mentioned earlier about the, you know, them having reformed themselves and been able to get decisions out quicker and all the rest of it. But firing a big ball of money at Uncommissioned Planella, I don't think is going to solve this problem on its own. Mm. We really do need real, genuine, full and thorough reform of the entire planning process, so that never again, Greg, am I talking to you on Highland Radio when 20-year-old, as I said, has held 12.5 million euro ransom. That is just mind-boggling and just wrong. That there's something terribly, terribly wrong with the system.
Okay.
Whenever you have a scenario like that. So, yes, definitely, and Commissioner Planella do need resources, they do need staff, they do need finance. I understand that. They are improving and they could do a lot better, but we definitely, definitely have got to see reform of the system, and I would love to see this project now been used as a test case to drive that reform, because to my mind, it's a very good example of the system being horribly wrong.
All right, Councillor Fionnán Bradley, thank you very much for that. But on that point, finally to you, Paul, just to get your view on it, you know, it's fantastic, the ambitious plans, if they were to be delivered, but the sticking point could potentially be on Commission Planella, and we need to make sure that's not the case. Maybe chucking money at it's not the solution, but, you know, it is going to be the choke point, it would seem.
Yeah, it is, and it's always going to be that, but we're in a situation now where we know what we have to do, and we just do it. Like, it's a case that where the proper treatment can't, they're of the opinion that the proper treatment can't be carried out the way that they're proposing. And we have to go back, and like you take any town, village, they have a complete network of pipework taking the sewer from one end of the town to the other. Listen, we're taking water from the Pollen Dam up as far as Letterkenny, so surely we'll be able to pipe a little bit of effluent from Dunree Fort to another field that can actually absorb the effluent and treat the effluent and have the separation distances from the Lough Swally. That will please everybody.
But some listeners will say, well, why wasn't that part of the original plans? But anyway, we could go around in circles on that one. They decided on a system, and that's where the project fell for now. Councillor Paul Canning, thanks very much indeed. Cahirlock, in fact, of Donegal County Council. Your reaction to that? This is devastating news for all of Inishowen. Unfortunately, one person sought fit to make an objection which sent this to a board on board Planella after it was granted by the council. Hopefully, this person will talk to the Donnery Committee rather than lodging an objection again. Another, we have to protect the environment, which is true, fair and accurate, I believe, but reading on, you can't mitigate for nature. Plus, why spend money on a military installation? There's plenty more projects that need the money without glorifying war and armies. Difference of opinions, as always. All right, talking now about more infrastructure that's falling foul of the system. I think you could argue that. Anyway, Councillor Micheál Colum McGowan-Asbeg, Independent, joins me on the show now. Now, Micheál Colum, thanks for your time. Some very important development in Fulcara is under question now. Give us the background to this story.
Yeah, I suppose the background to this is that without discussing, I suppose, or dismissing all those that are waiting for a home and those that are homeless and those that had to emigrate due to the fact that they couldn't get a forever home, never mind what the council could get to rent or to get a mortgage. Look, we've been working very hard to try to get as many homes built as possible this last couple of years, and the Fulcara Gash Valley would be one of the towns that we're looking very much trying to get a homes built, and they, one of the AHB's response had required land, or there's land there to be built on a contractor's land, and the ins and outs of contractors and who builds and who doesn't, that's a different conversation for a different day. But right now, that contractor, which I've been engaging quite a lot with, and just to be very clear, I have discussed this with my ethical officer and declared publicly as well. So what happened is that the contractor in question had submitted planning. Due to no fault of his own, he had to reapply again for planning. And the situation lies now is that, to my understanding, is that everything is all lined up, all the ducks in a row, apart from one. And that one is that apparently Éireann is not allowing the contractor to tap into the wastewater infrastructure that is already there, and that means that them houses can't go forward.
And it's 30 homes, independent living homes. What are they designed for? I know you touched on that, but just a little bit more information.
Sorry, Greg. So basically, there's 29 homes, again, which are badly needed in the area, and one independent living, which means that there'd be a four-bedroom independent living with wraparound services in conjunction with the HSE. This is something that I've been pursuing for a very long time, and we're starting to make some shapes in relation to it now, and others. So it's really important that even if it's one home, that we aren't faced with any obstacles. And I've been in contact on a not a daily basis, but every couple of days, what they're scaring, trying to figure out what is going on. Now, it's very clear, and we've said this from very day one, and you know this yourself, Greg, is that we felt very much that the Askerin weren't going to do what needs to be done, or else the government isn't giving Askerin the finances to do what has to be done. It's not just in Elkara or the Crash Valley, but the likes of Gartaharke, Anagra, other areas that we need massive investment into our wastewater. Now, we hear the country's awash with the money right across the state, and I believe there is quite a lot of money. And I think just the very fact of it and the bold bluntness of it all is that the government has made decisions, and I don't like to compare rural to urban areas, but in the rural area that I represent is that they decided that they won't invest into a wastewater treatment for Gidor or for Anagra or the other areas that we badly need wastewater treatment plants, so we can build homes, so we can protect the environment, and that we can start to build stable communities. Because as we see it right now is that we have one or two generations that have left of no fault of their own, because they cannot afford to live in the very community they're from or they want to live in. And that's why they have went to other foreign lands to seek a better life.
What's the solution to this, though? I mean, do you concede that the Crash Valley potentially doesn't have the capacity to have 30 extra connections? We did hear recently that as part of the National Development Plan, the government is investing significantly in water infrastructure, obviously through Ishka Aaron. Are you trying to make sure that some of that money is ring-fenced for a project like this? Are you saying that these connections should be allowed? What do you believe, as a local rep who has more information on this than I might, what do you believe the solution might be?
Well, the solution is right now that we're allowed to tap into, that the contractor is allowed to tap into the wastewater that exists there at the moment, so that we can build these homes. And because of excessive governments over many, many generations who actually failed to actually care enough to invest into the infrastructure that we badly, badly need, this is the mess that we're left with now. And the reality of it is that there is no interest to invest into the rural areas of small populations. And one could nearly be blamed to be a conspiracy theorist on this one, but it's hard not to think about it, that we're being forced out of rural areas more into the bigger urban areas. And that's not how we want to live in rural Ireland. We need to have our small towns and our wee villages, but we need the infrastructure, and we're entitled to the infrastructure because that's where we live. We all pay our taxes. And it's just unfortunately that we consistently vote against their own interests.
But it's not just even the... you could almost say, is it countywide? Because, I mean, in reality, could any new water connections be allowed in Milford, for an example? It's been under a hose pipe ban for God knows how long now. There's serious pressure on water supplies in other areas of the county outside rural areas. I mean, be it access to waste treatment plants or the sewer network, or actually access to, you know, fresh running water, it would seem in much of the county, is there any capacity for development at all?
There is, of course, and as my old Uncle Liam used to say, money can fix this if money is made available to fix it. And I know that it's just, I'm talking specifically about the Crash Valley, but it's, yes, it is Ballinagalagla, where Declan Meehan is there. We talk a lot about this here. And in terms of Letchkennan with Patty McGowan, would discuss it in Thomas Shawn, and there's a huge lack of proper investment and a huge lack of foresight over many, many years by those that are being elected. And if you look at even Gador in the west of the county, in Cree and the Gaeltachta, where we've been promised since back in the 70s that we would have a sewer treatment facilities there, and that hasn't been delivered. Al-Chaharan down at the port was there this morning, extremely busy, and yet again, no proper investment into what has to be into a community that we're trying to develop. We need more homes into that community. There is a projection that our population growth is going to grow over the next 20 years, but I don't see the investment happening.
Well, now, you see, that population growth, if the truth be told, is identified for Letterkenny.
No, well, no, there's an expected population growth right across the whole county. It's not just in Liscannon. But even our Clonlea here, we expect there's going to be quite a population growth, and which is welcome.
What will drive that, though? What's driving that population growth? Because we're hearing schools are struggling to stay open because there aren't pupils. So where's this population growth
There are schools that are struggling to stay open, and you know, I know this is another conversation, but they're all interconnected in terms of investment and development and future planning. And there are, like Naduhari, if you look at it, Nympha, if you look at Anheju, and there are other schools there that the population has dramatically fallen. And I know that you have done great work in terms of Anheju as well on your radio. But there are other schools who are doing quite well as well in relation to the school population. And communities like Lochinvar and other areas where if we as a state invest into them communities in terms of wastewater treatment for Lochinvar and proper water infrastructure, where we get our main water supply, and yet within 100 yards, the community up in the hills can't even get running water. Yeah. They're dependent off it to come off the bogs. But if we invest properly, like if you put in, like we have in Anagar, we have 7 new houses there, that means a huge amount in terms of securing your local community. And it's an absolute disgrace, and it's really important that Askeran actually engages with us. And I know there's the ESB stuff too that we need to discuss and need to
we can build that
more
that,
investment
that, that, that can be built. The water seems to be, and the wastewater
the
seems
the water
to be more
is
of
the main
issue.
One here at the
all
moment.
Right, listen,
and we were saying and we were saying this all along, Greg, right through for when we had Can't Pay, Won't Pay. We foreseed all these things in the protests and our public meetings and our conversations in the media, and this is where we're at now. And what has to happen, and yes, I do believe the government parties are to blame here, but I also know that there are government members within the chamber, a few of them who are really passionate about this and who are calling for this as well. Like, and we need to work together to find a way forward that we don't have the likes of Fulcara and 30 homes being stalled.
It's incredibly disappointing that 30 houses aren't going to be available, because
I have people sleeping in cars. Like,
yeah, I know. Okay.
People sleeping on couches, people in homeless hostels outside of their own communities, not getting the support services that they badly need locally. There is an absolute shit show out there. And it's terrible, because these are human beings that we're dealing with. These are people that we know. These are people who are our family, our friends, and I could get upset now, because there are families out there now who are absolutely struggling. Listening to the radio this morning, the amount of people who are out there now because they can't afford their heating and their electric, because their priorities, and rightly so, putting food on the table. Yeah. An absolute mess, and we need to call this out for what it is.
Right.
These are political decisions made by those that people are electing, and we're voting against our own interests.
No, I know it's very important points, and I just have a couple of ad breaks to take and another guest before 10.
Thanks,
but thank
Greg,
you very much
I really
indeed.
Appreciate that for you,
Sloan,
Caroline.
Thank you. Bye bye. That is Councillor Micheál Colum. We'll take a quick break, and we'll have another guest for you before 10. I think we've discussed this before. That maybe objections to planning, especially important planning, it's all important, I suppose. It's too easy. You believe there should be reform here in this county?
Yeah, definitely so, Greg, and good morning to the listeners as well. As I brought forward there before, there recently there to the council, I had a motion there of a proposal of €500 for an objection to put that forward to the department. Now, obviously, that day, as you're aware, that has been put forward now for further discussion among ourselves in a workshop setting, I believe. And then we'll decide from that onwards, then Donegal County Council will decide onwards then what's the best way, plan of action, putting it forward then to the department. So €500 I proposed at that time instead of the €20 as there at the minute now. Unknown to me as well, by the way, my colleagues down in Kerry, on the County Council down in Kerry, they've actually, one of their councillors has come up with a proposal of €2,000. So likewise, same with ourselves here in Donegal, Kerry County Council as well, have deferred it for the moment as well for further discussion. Because some of the other councillors down there, they see it as a good thing.
The only issue, and I've sort of mentioned this to you before, the problem I have with this is that you could get someone who earns €100,000 a year object to something because they can easily access the €500 or the €2,000. But you could get someone with legitimate concerns who's on social welfare who wouldn't be able to object. And that would be the barrier, not actually whether or not their objection was valid or not, if that makes sense. And that's what I struggle with in this process, that it excludes people based on their income thresholds.
Yeah, I agree with you perfectly. Right?
So what's the solution?
Well, the solution is we sit down around the table and we talk about it. Like I said that day in Lifford, the €500, it's not a goal, it's not a target to meet, it's a figure. Mm. It's only a figure I threw out there. Whether people agree or disagree, you know, including yourself, is perfectly welcome. But it's up to people as well to go around the table and decide, look, we don't agree with this €500, but this will be acceptable. Let's put this forward, see where we go. And that's all I'm asking for, no more than my colleagues down in Kerry, because the exact same conversation is going to have to be had down there. Although, in fairness, other councillors down there want more men, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes alongside the proposed fee. But I think Councillor Canning had it rightly had there when he was talking. We seem to be in a county, Greg, that object about everything, and that's not right either, like, because there's plenty, especially in a housing crisis, for example, anyway. Look, I respect everybody's right to object. It is the total right to object. Anybody wants to object, object, fine. But do not object when you're objecting because somebody else has influenced you, as I've experienced throughout my role as a councillor. Object is because you want to object yourself, do something. If Greg's doing something, if Michael's doing something, I'm not happy with that. Fair enough, you throw in your €20, you put in your valid objection why you're doing that, but don't do it because your neighbour called round. You know what, by the way, we're going to nail him now. Just no, that's not the way we want it. And there's too much of that going on. There's too much of that going on.
I don't think a financial barrier is necessarily the way to go. But as you say, that's just your opinion, my opinion, and it'll all be decided through conversation and debate. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. It just would be the bit that would stick in my craw a little bit, because I don't see why someone who's well-resourced should have a better access to the objections process than someone who's less resourced. But anyway, it'll be teased out. Councillor, thanks for holding. Thanks for making your point briefly, because we are under pressure because we're heading towards news at 10.